No. Are you ready to go?
Yep, ready.
All right. Good afternoon. We're going to open the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. For the record, it's Tuesday, February 22nd, 2005. I'm Representative Greg Smith. Today we are going to have an informational meeting on Oregon's training programs. And with us we have Mr. James Sager. So, welcome.
Thank you, Representative Smith and the members of the committee. I asked Lita Colligan, who's our workforce policy advisor, to come along with me today. We will go through...
It's getting scary.
I thought maybe if I started quickly we could...
I'll vote for that.
If you move to the last page of the docket... what you have in front of you, first let me explain what you have there. Three different packets. Gave you a copy of the annual report, which I think if you have time to read through it in your leisure, it will help answer a lot of the questions that you might have about the various programs. In the back, we have quite a set of tables that go into a lot of detail about dollars and where those dollars go. So we thought that would be helpful for you. I also included four loose pieces of paper that some of it is repetitious from the book and from the presentation we're going to make, but I thought it might, again, provide some focus on some areas that you might have had some questions about. So with that, I would like to walk you through this PowerPoint presentation, and I'll do the opening about half of it, then turn it over to Lita to do the second half, and we'll answer questions.
Perfect.
I know that... some of you, or maybe all of you, were a part of a presentation here not too long ago where, for instance, the state of Florida was presented as a model where they, at the state level, have really coordinated their services. And while we appreciate the work that they're doing at the state level, our focus here in Oregon, and we have really become a national model for this, is to make sure that the coordination takes place in the local and regional areas where the workers, the unemployed workers, the businesses really exist. And so that has been our focus of work. And we have put together what is now being branded as WorkSource Oregon so that it is a very centralized system. It is a statewide network of public and private partners working together. And our effort is to... We're not projecting, sorry. There we go. Okay, now it'll be a little easier. Really to connect the businesses with the resources they need to grow their workforce. Again, our focus has been that the people in the local and regional areas have a better understanding of what their needs are, and so they develop a plan that's tailor-made for what they want to grow in their communities, and the state is then to provide assistance in those efforts. And then also to provide job seekers. So we're trying to have the demand and supply side really come together at those local areas. We have... our regional 15 regions with one-stop centers. In the red dots you can see we have 40 one-stop centers around the state, and I'll get into a little more detail as to what I mean with the one-stops, but again, we wanted to show that this is spread out across the state, again, to focus on those local needs. Funding comes from both the state and federal level. The federal funding comes through the governor's office out to the different agencies administered by Department of Community College and Workforce Development. They have several of these programs that run through their department. The Department of Human Services, the Department of Education, and the Oregon Employment Department also handle several of these pieces at the state level. And we have state funds that are administered also then by the Employment Department, Economic Development, the Community Colleges, University System, K-12, Department of Ed. And also we've got one bullet on here which kind of stimulated this its presentation today, which was the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and that was the workers' comp program, and we forgot to put that bullet on. Sorry about that. So the question really becomes then, how do we manage all this around the state? We have the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. 51% of the members are business leaders. We have two representatives, Representative Krupp and Representative Beyer, who are the legislative members. And then we have representatives from the different state agencies that attend the meetings. Lita and or myself attend on behalf of the governor, so that we have this statewide advisory investment board, again, directed by the business community, or the majority being the business community. As I mentioned, we have 15 regions. They each have their local boards then that, again, look at designing the economic development strategy for that area, so that it isn't the state dictating, it is the regions identifying what they need, and again, the state being there to help provide service. And we deliver a lot of the services through the 40 WorkSource One-Stop centers. And these centers pull together all the resources so that a person, literally like the name calls for, it's a one-stop. They can go in and have access to a variety of services that they need. Then at the, I guess, the more macro level, we have the Workforce Policy Cabinet, which we get together on a regular basis. It's people, again, from each of the departments. We get together to make sure that we're each aware of what the other is doing, what they're thinking about, how we're coordinating our services with the Workforce Investment Board, how we're coordinating our services with our regional delivery system, again, to make sure that the state is there to provide the assistance that is being called for from the region up, as opposed to the other way around. For the business community, this system really helps to look at recruiting and screening candidates. One of the items that I'll get to in a minute is called iMatch, and it is a huge step forward on the part of Oregon to try and help align workers, their skills with what is needed in the workforce. Of course, we pull together a lot of the labor market data. We help with job fairs and occupational testing, financing of worker training programs, and in a moment, Lita's going to get into some real details about some things that have been very exciting in that area we've been dealing with. And then outplacement assistance for companies who are downsizing. We're trying to make sure that we're in a position to be ready to respond when a business is either feeling the need to downsize or, quite honestly, feeling the need maybe even to close, that to try and walk that fine line with businesses to where they feel comfortable enough to give us heads up that something's coming, to make sure that if it's possible for us to provide them assistance and thus keep their employees and keep their business going, we can get in there early. If it's not possible, then to be there to help make sure that they can help their employees through the transition. Developing and delivering customized training, that is an ongoing process, and again, I keep emphasizing this. This is by training providers that are providing that service at the local level. High demand and emerging occupations, again, working with those teams at the local level to help identify those so that they can build their economy. And we recommend everyone go to WorkSourceOregon.org, check out the website, because it is full of a lot of information that I'm skimming over quite quickly. And this is just one of the many people that have been helped through our service, John Falk. Workers, again, come in. It's not just they walk in to see if there's a job posting on a wall anymore. It is quite a comprehensive series of services that we provide. Some of the employees simply need to come in and have access to a database to look for jobs. Others need very intense assistance in how to put together a resume, how to prepare for an interview. The iMatch program that I want to touch on very quickly, if you haven't heard a lot about it, is extremely useful for businesses and employees, because it isn't just matching up a job title with what an employee thinks that they're able to do. but it matches up. An employee goes in and says, I have skills or training in these different areas. And then a series of jobs who require that set of skills pops up. And oftentimes it may be a job that the potential employee had never thought of before. But now we're connecting skills rather than the person needing to know kind of what kind of class of job that they need to be looking at. And again, all the education components and assistance are tied around those services. And again, another one of our examples of a student who was able to find employment. So here's the iMatch. It's a web website. There are thousands of jobs that the employment division have put together. Like I said, it matches the job seekers and businesses based on skills. And the potential employee walking in can do it by themselves, sit down at a computer, log in, and start searching, or there are staff available in the one-stops to provide that assistance. And another customer, another satisfied customer. During 2003 and 2004, we had over 213,000 people register with WorkSource Oregon. 71% were placed in jobs. 250,000 received job search assistance. So again, we're there to help the people do the search. In tracking the performance of the people, the jobs they had before and after, we saw an average increase of 82 cents per hour. And again, in the annual report that we gave you earlier, it breaks it down by the region so you can actually see how we're affecting each part of the state. About 21,000 adults, dislocated workers, and youth received intensive and training services. And that's, when we say intensive, that's what I mentioned a minute ago about really sitting down with the person who doesn't even know how to prepare the resume or prepare for a job interview, et cetera, to help them get over those obstacles. 86% of adults and 87% of dislocated workers found jobs. We think that that is well above the targets that we had set for ourselves. 6,000 Oregon workers received training through grants provided by their employers. And again, this is focused on employers that are identifying skills that their employees need, either for their employee to advance and or for the business to remain competitive, because we think that that is an important component of what we're there to do, is to help our Oregon businesses remain competitive. The 15 workforce response teams awarded over $3 million to business for current workforce training. And again, a lot of those training issues are provided through our community colleges or B1 private providers.
Question?
I'm sorry.
Representative Richardson. Mr.
Chair, can you tell us if you're involved at all with the trades? Do you help facilitate apprenticeships and those kinds of things?
You want to talk about that? Sure. Excuse me, Chair Smith, Representative Richardson. We are involved with the trades on various levels. Some of the one-stops actually recruit people and help them get into apprenticeship programs. Many of our community colleges also run apprenticeship or pre-apprenticeship programs. And right now we're engaged with them on helping provide workers for the ODOT projects as well.
Thank you.
We also have a special program with labor right now where we're trying to help facilitate, in fact, a closer labor management cooperation, this kind of training. And as you, and again, I don't need to go through all these, but we tried to list all the kind of the bigger picture item of the folks that we've been delivering service to. And with that, I will turn it over to Lita, and she can go into some details.
Well, I'm not sure if I should. I've been taking questions down. I don't know if you'd like those questions now or wait. What works best for the two of you?
I think it might be easier if I go ahead and finish, and then you could ask the questions, because some of them may be answered moving forward. We'll see. do you want me to proceed?
Please.
Great. What James has given you is an overview of our traditional workforce training system, and he mentioned in his comments that some of you had heard a presentation about Florida. We have structured our system a little differently than that, although we do feel like through our workforce policy cabinet, we are getting a lot of coordination at the state level and then more of the intense cooperation at the regional level, as Jim talked about. When the governor was elected, he set up a task force on workforce development to try and take a look at how to improve the system. And what he heard, his committee was led by business and labor, and he got a lot of feedback, and he talked to businesses and labor representatives around the state. And what he heard from them was the needs in the system were threefold. One was that services need to be better streamlined, not so much fixing the bureaucracy, if you will, but having it be easier for workers and businesses to find the services that were there. And then the second thing that he heard from them was better connecting supply and demand. As Jim mentioned, we have a lot of services for employers. We have a lot of services for businesses. How are those connected? And how are we making sure that we're preparing workers for the right types of jobs, the ones that the businesses are truly seeking? And also, he recognized that we had the opportunity to really use our workforce training system as an economic driver, which I think is probably your interest today. How do we train people and have them have the skills they need so we're really actually driving job creation? And then last was expanding services for workers and for businesses and incumbent workers. And the reason I say that is that most of the services that James described are for workers who are unemployed. They're for people who've lost their jobs, they need a new job, they need to go through transition, they're for youth that are out of school. And what we didn't have through many of our federal funding streams and categorical programs was the way to help workers who already had a job but maybe in a low-skilled job increase their skills and move up in their career ladder. And so the governor asked us to focus some of our emphasis there. So I'm going to go through sort of what we've accomplished in some of those areas for you very briefly. The streamlining of services, James mentioned WorkSource Oregon. We have really made an effort over the last 2 years to brand the system, and that means that even though a program may be funded by Employment Department or by community colleges or by Department of Human Services, they're all WorkSource Oregon partners, and we've created an image, and we're really focused on public awareness around that brand. And we have a big marketing effort underway. We have some billboards up, and we've been doing some radio advertising, but mostly we're training people through all our workforce regions and all these boards that you see to get out and talk to their local press, work with their rotaries, and all of that kind of marketing at the regional level. We also have this new iMatch system, which I won't go into, and we've really focused on some other streamlining of services. One area with the Employment Department is that they have consolidated all their unemployment insurance services into 4 call centers. And so, again, we're making it easier for customers to get service. Sometimes you don't have to travel into a center anymore. You can do it on the Internet or you can do it by phone. So, again, using technology. And then more co-location of programs. So, again, even though we have a lot of different funding sources, at the regional level in our WorkSource Oregon centers, the customer doesn't know that. They just know that they're getting services. They might be getting childcare services or they might be getting job training, but they don't know that they're funded from different sources. So more consolidation that way. And then second, on connecting better to the economy, we have spent a lot of time really working with employment and their workforce analysts and trying to make sure that region by region that the WorkSource Oregon centers and teams know how to use their labor market information, that they look at their economy, they look at the types of companies that are growing, they look at the clusters in their regions that are connected to the economic development clusters that OECDD is supporting and advocating their growth, and they try to connect their job services to that work. We also did something that's actually pretty unique nationally, and that is that we formed in each region a workforce response team. And those teams are a combination of agency staff that includes employment, community colleges, who do, like, for instance, the customized training for businesses, the workforce system staff, and then we've connected those people with the economic development staff, so the staff from Oregon Economic and Community Development that are working in the regions, as well as the local economic development entities. And they meet regularly to look at where their economy is going and which companies have the most importance in their economy and how do they support incumbent worker training with those companies. So as you can see on the teams, we have a list of people involved, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about. But also, we've been working in order to drive the economy through our workforce training system with labor organizations and with many of these business organizations to try and make sure that we're preparing people for the right kinds of jobs. And then, again, last but not least, we've expanded services to businesses and to incumbent workers, and we've set up, through the work of these workforce response teams, the governor has redirected some of the federal dollars that he over which he has discretion from the Workforce Investment Act into an employer workforce training fund. That fund, about $6 million a year, is used for incumbent worker training. And that is the area that we had heard from this task force was missing in our workforce training system. So we're actually working directly with companies to provide training to upgrade the skills of their workers. So far in the last probably 18 months, this is where these dollars have gone. We have had 159 projects in all 15 of the workforce regions of the state. Approximately 8,000 individuals have been trained. And we tried to provide you here with a list of the different areas or clusters that they are supporting. So in each of these areas, we're actually raising the skills of the current workers who are in jobs. This is just a chart that shows you how the dollars, which industries benefited most from the training that is going on. And we have quite a few companies, and I could give you some strategic examples if you wanted to hear about some of the companies that are benefiting from those funds. For instance, in Roseburg, one of the companies that we funded was called North River Jet Boats, and they received a grant through their workforce response team to upgrade their worker skills. But in the process, we were able to land that company expansion here in Oregon. They added 125 jobs. They trained their new workers, they trained their old workers into the new jobs, and then they recruited from our unemployed workers in our workforce system into the previous jobs. So you can see that some of the job training that's going on is actually driving job expansion and job growth in the state. And that's not an uncommon story. 125 jobs is large for Roseburg, but we have some examples all around the state of expansions. And some of you might have also recently heard about Molecular Probes. The governor made an announcement about that company adding jobs. Keystone RVs in the Pendleton area. So we have quite a few where we're actually seeing that if they got some help with training, that they would make an expansion here in our state. A few other areas, I'm moving on to the strategic investments. You saw on one of the previous slides that with the workforce training, that the Employer Workforce Training Fund, that we had moved 65% into the regions for these incumbent worker grants to companies. And we also reserved some dollars at the statewide level for strategic investments. And I'm just going to give you an example of two of those investments because I think it's so important for you to see where we have some critical needs in the state. One is in healthcare, and we have large shortages of healthcare workers across occupations. Nursing is the most evident to people, but we also have shortages in radiology technician and other areas. And so we have launched an initiative using some of these workforce training dollars to assist with or to overcome some of the barriers to getting more healthcare workers trained. And one of the barriers is the clinical capacity. We don't have enough seats, if you will, or beds for students to get all the hours of training they need in a clinical environment. And so we've actually, with some dollars, purchased mannequins. They're called SimMan, and they can be used to train people and to provide some of that clinical training that they might not be able to get in the hospital or clinic environment. And we've formed coalitions of healthcare providers, training providers, hospitals, health systems all around the state to receive these new technologies, the SIMMAN, and to figure out how to cooperate and coordinate training and to be able to expedite the training of healthcare workers. So a little bit of our workforce training dollars went into that, as well as we received some other federal grants to assist with the project.
I'm wondering if, in the course of trying to deal with the shortage like nurses, if you've given much thought to coordinating with universities and colleges on distance learning, to where you could do clinical work wherever you're at, but through real-time audiovisual be able to attend classes from wherever you're at instead of having to be in the selected locations that are presently in place.
Yeah. Representatives Smith and Richardson, yes, we have. In fact, the healthcare initiative has six parts to it. The simulation is one. Telecommunications and distance learning is another area where that group is focused. They have about 20 healthcare organizations around the state who are part of this coalition trying to solve the problem, and they are coordinating with higher ed institutions, community colleges, and 4 years. It's and also beyond training, also looking at how to deliver telemedicine that way using technology. One other strategic investment that I'd like to mention briefly is that the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, known as OCED, had a committee on workforce development as well. And they, over a period of a couple years, did a roadmap. They called it the IT roadmap. And what they were trying to look at was, how do we keep our IT workers, our IT professionals in the state trained and have them have current skills and be able to sort of drive economic growth as well. And what they identified was that I think about 85% of our IT workers in the state do not work in IT companies. They work in food processing companies and Les Schwab's and all kinds of different types of companies around the state. And so we tried to look at what would be a way that we could upgrade IT worker skills across all these industries. And they came up with a proposal that they forwarded to our workforce board, and our workforce board decided to put some of our strategic investment dollars into that to set up what we're calling now the Oregon Training Network. And essentially, it's working in cooperation with the Software Association of Oregon to figure out how to broker and provide IT training in the state in class areas that we don't already provide. So it might be proprietary training of Novell or something like that, but if we don't have it, they're trying to figure out how to take two people from Les Schwab and two people from North River Jet Boats and two people from Weyerhaeuser that need that class, aggregate them, and then provide that training for them. So we're looking at creative ways to keep our workforce skilled up and trying to look toward the future, not just doing the work that we have traditionally done with our traditional clients. And then a future focus. This is sort of some of the areas where we're looking for some of our work right now. And this is driven by, again, Jim mentioned, the Oregon Workforce Investment Board at the state level. We want to continue to provide more connections between economic and workforce development. We see this workforce system as one of the tools in the economic development tool chest. And it's a tool that we need to continue to expand so they can use it for more expansion and more recruitment of companies. This is a great tool for marketing, and we've been effective actually in getting quite a lot of PR out about some of the changes that we've been driving in the system so that companies outside the state might also see that they have access to this very valuable resource. We're also, the governor asked the Oregon Workforce Investment Board very recently to appoint a manufacturing committee. So we're convening right now a committee of about 15 manufacturing CEOs and HR directors to talk with them about where's the future of manufacturing in the state and how do we prepare workers for their industry. Even though we may not be adding a lot of new jobs in manufacturing, we have been very successful. Some of our companies have been in retaining jobs based on looking at new types of business practices and processes, particularly high performance. And what we're hoping to do with this group is look at their 10,000 projected new jobs and their 50,000 projected replacement jobs and figure out how to get people trained for them for the coming years so we can really have an effective manufacturing sector in the state. And then we also have a project in conjunction with our community colleges and many other pieces of our education system called Career Pathways. And this is not about delivering new programs, but about how do we restructure how we deliver some of our community college classwork so that we can get more adults achieving post-secondary credentials and certificates. And again, we realize that there's a lot of improvements still to be done with the system, but we think we've made a lot of progress, and we're hoping that you will think so, too. So we'll be happy to take questions.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you provide the connection for us between the governor's proposed budget and the ability to deliver the services through this program as you've projected? Kind of draw that connection for us, if you could, please.
Well, again, Representative Senator Morse, the governor, in looking at his budget, has repeatedly said that education is the driver behind our economic future. And so his focus on education, the full spectrum of education, meaning not just the traditional kind of K-20 areas, but the workforce development piece, is very important. And so the dollars you see here are primarily dollars that we're leveraging from the federal government to help us be able to help out. But we're also, the governor also looked very carefully at, as we invest strategically in the budget, are we going to be able to stimulate the economy, be able to put workers in a position where they can advance their skill level, and businesses to be able to provide services so that, as Lita mentioned, employees can move up in the career ladder, keeping the business competitive, but then also opening up the door for the new worker coming in. And so he has tried to keep all that in mind as he has tried to fashion his budget inside the constraints that he has had.
Thank you. Follow up,
please.
And I appreciate the dilemma that the governor's in. We're all in that boat right now. But more specifically, I guess the impacts on the community colleges as a partner and a driver in this, to what extent does it impinge the success of this program? And if you could speak to that, is really what I was interested in.
Sure. Speaker Smith, Senator Morris, thank you for that clarifying the question for me. It is a challenge, and that's why the governor has recognized that the impact that we thought we were going to have on community colleges in the positive sense from the budget we discovered didn't match up with the reality of the numbers, which is why he has repeatedly stated now that he wants to work with all of you in the legislature. I notice our commissioner is now sitting behind me, and I'm glad she is here, as well as the presence of the community colleges, to find a way to provide additional resources to our community colleges, because as you infer in the question, they are absolutely vital in this process. They are a conduit from many respects, both the traditional academic kind of pathway, but also the professional technical training that, and the incumbent worker training that is vital to the state. So we're going to be working very closely with the commissioner and the presidents and all of you.
Thank you.
Let's dig down a little deeper. Can you share with the committee the formula that you folks use for distributing money out to the regions?
Representative Smith, are you asking about the formula for all the workforce training dollars, or is it just for this new incumbent worker fund?
Well, why don't we maybe take a moment and share with us the difference between those. I'm looking at this.
Okay, you're looking at the whole system.
How do you determine how much money goes to each region?
We could ask the commissioner to address that most effectively, I think.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Cam Croy-Sprawley. I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges. I am also the Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. The federal dollars that come to the state come to us via an allocation that's based on our unemployment rate, our excess unemployment rate, and the percent or number of economically disadvantaged individuals in the state. We then use that same formula weighting by county to distribute the funds to the 15 workforce regions. So the higher your unemployment rate, higher your excess unemployment rate, the larger share you receive as a state, and then the larger share a region in the state would proportionally receive. That is for about $110 million that comes to the state in a biennium that helps fund the WorkSource Oregon one-stop centers. The Wagner-Peiser dollars that come to the employment department are based on a different set of factors, but unemployment and excess unemployment are, again, at least two of the factors, but I don't have packed away in my brain how the employment department, what their exact formula is, but we can certainly bring that back to you. And that's distributed to the offices of the employment department for staffing reasons, whereas in our case it's delivered to local community-based organizations, which then decide how their share of the state's allocation is used.
Do you have flexibility to direct those dollars in the event that there's a more pressing need for them in another part of the state? Let's say Region 13 had its allocation but really didn't have the most pressing need where Region 2 did. Do you have the ability to move those over?
Chair Smith, not a lot of flexibility at the state level other than that portion of the funds that makes up the governor's reserve.
Is that flexibility because of rule?
Chair Smith, that is primarily because of the way the federal dollars are allocated. They are allocated for adults who are unemployed or underemployed, for youth who are at risk of dropping out of school who have already dropped out, and then the third pot of resources we receive are for dislocated workers.
I guess my question is, does the federal government require the state to take that allocation and distribute it based on the same allocation that they used for giving us the money?
I'm sorry. Yes. Chair Smith, thank you for helping me understand your question. A state can add additional criteria. It cannot use different criteria. So we must use those three. We can add more. And for the dislocated worker program, we actually do add more, particularly in the past 3 or 4 years, we have used different weightings to ensure that rural parts of the state receive a modicum more than the urban areas, just because services have been so difficult to actually deliver in the more sparsely populated places of the state. So we can add more, but we must follow, we must include the three that come with the dollars from the Department of Labor.
I just want to make sure I'm really clear on this. So if LeGrand had 100,000 and Pendleton had 100,000, but the real need was in Pendleton, you don't have the ability to, because of federal regulation, to jump it over to the other region.
That's correct, Chair Smith. The state can't just decide to move money. We have, and it's probably been 3 or 4 years, when we get to February or March and there are dollars in a particular workforce region that they don't believe that they will use, we have actually transferred resources from one region to another, but that's not how it is allocated, and that's only happened a couple of times that I can recall. Prompting here. We also apply for national discretionary dollars from the Department of Labor where there is a layoff or a plant closure or a mass layoff. I've been to the emergency board many times requesting approval to apply for a grant that will serve dislocated workers, and that's very area specific. We have garnered somewhere in the neighborhood of an additional $12 million in the last biennium to serve dislocated workers across the state.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Thanks, Kim. I'm sort of struggling with the definitions. You used a number of them that I don't know what the definitions are. Underemployed, or who makes the determination that a youth is at risk of dropping out, or economically disadvantaged individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me with the definitions of all of those?
Chair Smith and Senator Johnson, I certainly can. You sound like you're in some discomfort.
No.
I don't want to add to it.
As friends. But
I'm on the mend. Miracle of modern pharmaceuticals. Thank you.
Let me say what I would like to do is bring you back a full definition of all of those terms. I will tell you what I have in my memory. Excess unemployment is that employment that is above the average unemployment rate. And that's a national number, not a state number. And so to the extent that you have excess unemployment, you have had people who have been unemployed at a rate higher than in your state or area than the national average.
So
and
for that, if Coos Bay has an unemployment rate of 10%,
mm-hmm.
and the national norm is 6, then Coos Bay has a 4% excess?
Chair Smith. Senator Johnson, on its most simplest terms, yes.
Okay.
And it is a portion of how the formula is then devised. Economically disadvantaged is pegged to the lower living standard, which is also set at the federal level, and there is a paragraph definition for what that is. And unemployment is unemployment as we know it is as reported. Excess unemployment really looks at individuals who may no longer be receiving unemployment but who have exhausted. And Oregon, this is what I commonly say is that because Oregon has done so poorly, we will do better. Our share of the federal resource will be somewhat larger because our unemployment rate has remained among the top 5, if not the top 2,
mm-hmm.
For the last so many years.
Okay, well, if you could come back with those, that would be very helpful.
I would certainly do that.
Senator Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we're really all in this together. As much as I appreciate all the hard work, not only of yours, but of many other similar groups that are trying to help, we have people in my area of Coos Bay, North Bend, that have been retrained 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
They still don't have a job.
Yes.
So as much as we want to talk about the training, until we can provide you with a list of employers who need the product of all of your hard work, we just keep going around in a circle. And I guess what I would want to ask of you, because you spend your time trying to match people to jobs, when I open the newspaper, I see a lot of jobs advertised. And I'm not in the process of matching people with jobs, but I look at those jobs and then I look at our unemployment statistics and I'm thinking, here are people looking for jobs, here are people like you training people for jobs, what am I missing?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't compute.
Well, I guess I can take that. This is a constant problem, and I think you're very astute to be identifying it, because when the employment department does their analysis, they provide us with a list of high-demand occupations and then a list of people who are looking for work, and there often is a mismatch. And really, that's one of the key things that we're really trying to do with some of these regional strategies that we've developed, because that analysis is happening at the state level, but maybe they need truck drivers in Coos Bay, but they don't need them in Portland, and that's where we're training them. So we've really tried to push some of this into the regions to look at their own economies and figure out where those matches need to be. And then I think also more jobs would be better. That's clear. And if we had more jobs, we would have more opportunities for people regardless of the skills that they have. But I think also the iMatch system and things like that are really important, because an ad might be running in Coos Bay again, and there may be somebody in Portland who never reads the Coos Bay paper. And so the more we can get people introduced to these electronic tools where they have the jobs available across the state, and the more we can market that system and get people plugged into it, I think the more we can get some of the job matching happening at the statewide level. But it is that's really our challenge that you've identified, is making sure we're preparing people for the jobs where we have the openings. Oh. And looking to the future about where those openings are going to be, because it takes more than a month to train somebody. Sometimes these, like the nurse jobs we've talking about, can be 2 years or 4 years or longer if you're waiting to get into a training program. So, you know, we have to be looking to the future as well as to what's available today.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
I'm so glad you mentioned truck drivers, because we had the largest cranberry crop that we've had in years, and we had trucks sitting empty, no drivers. We have a very serious shortage of people. If they're young, they don't want to leave their families, so you have to wait until people decide, well, that's okay, I'd like to be a long-haul driver. And I know that Thomas and Sons, a successful business in our area, trucking business, said that they would even be willing to provide the space for having a training program for truck drivers. And I think that if we could just match all these ideas, and here's a business that's willing to provide some support by it, and here's a need that we truly have in transferring Oregon products. So it is a challenge, and I understand, and I applaud the hard work that you do. It's just very frustrating to those of us in public service and those of us who work together with the community colleges and the business development centers. My husband and I own a business, and we often are called on to go out and to talk to people in classes about what we expect as employers and what makes a good employee and all the things you're used to. So we try to provide as much support as possible, and yet I'm devastated by the kind of unemployment statistics that we continue to have since the 1980s.
Senator Johnson.
And I'm so glad you mentioned nurses. I had a charming young lady in my office yesterday bemoaning the fact that she's a student at a community college and has worked really hard to maintain high grades and wants desperately to be a nurse and is going to be thrown into a lottery system to see whether or not she can be selected. To me, that is a complete no-brainer, and it is probably another subject for another time. I think that's just wicked, whosever policy that is. Set that aside, and let's come back to your page on, and I apologize for missing some of this, but strategic investments, healthcare, workforce. It seems to me that we don't need a lot of studies to figure out that we have a nursing shortage. The Northwest Health Foundation did an exhaustive study. You only have to open up a magazine to realize that the boomers, all of us, are going to be requiring additional health care shortly. We haven't done very well by our current crop of seniors in providing health care. And it seems to me that you have such a clear market, pent-up demand for people that want to go to the point that they're willing to participate in lotteries, and why it is that we can't just focus on that problem and the obvious solution that's been handed to us and say, We ought to take a sizable amount of money and invest in nursing programs to get bedside nurses, not PhD nurses or administrator nurses, but bedside nurses. Mm-hmm. And while I applaud the simulation alliances and all the rest of this, what I'm trying to figure out is when I go to my community college and they say, we know this is a growing demand, this is a highly desirable, well-compensated profession, and we can't train any nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Help me get past that piece, Cam. When I listen to all the funding for community colleges, I just must be too dumb to get that one figured out.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, you are not at all without faculties to answer that question. I wish it were as simple as it would appear on its face. Clearly, it's not. There are what I would call confounding influences to the nursing shortage. There are seemingly a wealth of people who want to become nurses. The last figure I heard is there were 900 people in the lottery at PCC for less than 200 nursing spots.
Why they don't peel off the top 200, that we'll talk about again later.
It will be interesting to, and I'll do some research so I know how the lottery is held. I don't think that all 4-point grade points go into a pool with all 3.5 or 3.25 or whatever, but I will make sure that I have a clear and concise answer to that question. But we also, the importance of the simulation is because as we talked with colleges and universities about where were the bottlenecks, one of the significant bottlenecks is in clinicals, finding enough practicum spaces for all the budding young nurses, male and female, to actually have the bedside time they need. That's why the simulation is so important, and in partnership with the Board of Nursing to have it credited as bedside time or practicum time. Because we also have a third shortage, and that's in nurse teachers, in nurse faculty. We need those PhDs and master teachers so that they can actually be in the classroom and teach. And the hardest thing I have heard from a community college is to attract and keep nursing faculty because salaries aren't competitive or for whatever the number of reasons are. So it's that's only to give you a few of the ones that I'm comfortable sharing because I don't operate a college.
Yeah.
I think it is certainly worth further discovery of are we pushing at exactly the right places? Are we putting the money in exactly the right places? And in Central Oregon, I know that Representative Richardson had to leave, but one of the very innovative things they're doing in Central Oregon is they have a mobile van that has equipment on it, and they are taking it into 4 adjoining counties from the Central Oregon Community College, and they have 18 total students in a landmass of, I don't know, something like 1,000, 1,500 miles. They're going to Burns, and they're going to Ontario, and they're going to Vail, and they're making, with this mobile van, in order to have nurses trained that can stay in that community because they can't afford to all come to Bend to go to school, but they really want to stay in that community and deliver nursing services. So they have thought, and if we had 100 of those vans in lots of rural communities, maybe that would be another part of the answer.
If the chair will allow me one last comment, this is going to be left for other people in other committees than those of us gathered here today. But one other thing that has been worrisome to me is we've sort of seen some of the questions arise about funding for the OUS system and community colleges, is the heavy emphasis, in my opinion, on 4-year degrees rather than on these jobs that will actually put somebody out in a shorter period of time into the market. And nursing, again, seems to be a pretty prime example of how to get somebody in a very lucrative, honorable profession very quickly, absent a 4-year traditional university degree. And I just don't want us to lose sight in our heavy emphasis to get everybody shuffled off into university that some of these folks, whether they're first-class electricians, first-class plumbers, first-class nurses, can arrive at a point of lucrative employability absent a traditional four-year.
Mm-hmm. If I might, Chair Smith, to expand on the nursing and a couple other questions that have come up, specifically on the nursing, we really are looking at that pipeline for nursing, because at the end of about a three-year training program are when the nurses qualify to take their boards and have a very good passing rate. So we're trying to make sure that we are filling that job placement emphasis. But what we're also hearing from a lot of the hospitals and clinics is that they really do prefer to have a four-year degree nurse because of their ability to take on a standard role. And so we have two different tracks now coming online. We have several community colleges that are continuing to work with their programs, have been very successful in putting nurses into the field. And now we've also, starting this fall, we'll have a coordinated curriculum with OHSU and several of our community colleges, so that if the student decides to exit at the end of the three-year period and go into the marketplace, they can. But if they want to go into the four-year program, the curriculum is properly aligned that they can do it quickly and, again, without repetitive nature of, you know, training, et cetera. So we are trying to look at both the demand side. Again, the hospital saying they really want as many four-year nurses as possible, but us realizing, especially in the rural parts of the state, we do need more nurses simply to make it through the process. The other comment, and Senator Virgil, I really appreciate your comments about the needing truck drivers and things. What the governor has heard and all over the state of Oregon is that it appears that we may have done ourselves a disservice in this state, in this country, over the last several years by giving the impression to high school students that they're only successful if they go through the traditional academic four-year college degree program. And we have literally hundreds of top-notch family wage jobs out there going unfilled because they were never encouraged to pursue welding, truck driving. Even the governor went to auto mechanics, yes, for your business, absolutely. The governor was at the electrician's apprenticeship program here just a few weeks ago and realized that the average age of the apprentice were 26, 27 years old. Many of them had their college degrees because they had the mindset that that's what they were supposed to do, and then realized their real passion was to become an electrician. So one of the other areas that we're working with the community colleges and our K-12 system is, again, to make sure that we're opening up the world of possibilities to students so that we begin to not go into the old kind of two-track system that people are worried about, but really expand students' view of what a quality job is and one that really meets their passion, and then make sure that we open up those pathways for their training.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond to
that?
I want to make an example here because I think it's so appropriate. One of the things that they did away with at the community college was the auto shop program. And we were just astounded because we know that they pay family wage jobs. We have no one. In fact, when the minimum wage discussion came up, we were looking, and we have no one that makes minimum wage. And so I think that we need to look at those programs in high schools. They're doing away with home economics. I think we're making a mistake, a big mistake.
Thank you. Looking at your number one point up on the board, collaborate more with economic development, expand tools, resources for businesses. That point leads me into another point you have, and that's your workforce response teams have awarded more than $3 million to businesses. The question I have is, can you walk the committee through how the process works for an employer to submit an application or to make it known that they would like to be a recipient of training dollars?
Sure. Chair Smith, we have a process that's managed by Community College and Workforce Development. I mentioned that we set up 15 workforce response teams around the state. What we do is we have an advisory committee, and now the Oregon Workforce Investment Board serves in that capacity. They decide what the funding formula will be for the resources to go to the regions. Each region gets an allocation based on some of the descriptions that Cam talked about previously. When they get their dollars, they have some guidance from us, and that is from the state about how they can deliver grants. And I think there's 7 criteria that they're supposed to be looking at, but a lot of it is focused on does the employer... Is the employer in a traded sector cluster? Will the training lead to certificates and credentials? Let's see. What are, do you remember the other? There's, anyway, there's 7 criteria, and at each at the regional level, then they develop an RFP process, if you will, and they advertise and they make it known that they're looking for potential projects. Or more organically, they may have been working with an industry, for instance, the food products industry or the wood products industry, and they will let people know through that channel. We've been really supporting the or encouraging the use of consortia projects. In other words, a number of employers together coming in for a training project so that we're training for multiple employers, maybe the same skill set. So they put out an RFP and they seek proposals, and then they use their criteria to determine which of those they think will lead to the most job creation, the most job retention, the most impact in their local economy, where they think the needs are in terms of connecting supply and demand and that sort of thing in their region. So we've actually provided guidance from the state, but we also have allowed a lot of local autonomy because we want them to be the ones that look at their economy. They have the relationships with the employers. They know who the employers are who are critically important at the regional level, and so we've structured it that way. And then they provide a grant for training. Usually it's in conjunction, or the employer can choose their own training provider, but often they use the community college to provide customized training. So if it's not something that they're already offering at the college, but for instance a specialized welding program or whatever it is that they need, then they can come in, the college can come in to the employer's workplace and offer that.
That's excellent. You mentioned that they work through the channels. If you have a region that's extremely large and perhaps even competitive in an industry, how do they work those channels? If I was a wood products company and it hit me, the communication came to my desk, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to forward it to my competitor in another county.
Right. Represent. I think, and actually, I don't know how each region is doing it specifically, but I know that when I say they're working through their network, we have on our teams economic development staff, employment department staff, workforce development staff. All of those people are in contact with employers in their region. So it may be a large geographical region, but we probably aren't notifying every single employer of the availability. I mean, I'm sure they're putting an ad in the paper and things like that, but it's mostly, I think, as economic development is working with a company and they say, I have workforce training needs, or I might need to leave if I don't get help, or I could expand if I got help, they then encourage them to apply for the resources. So a lot of it is about the network of service providers that we have out there already.
So how do you avoid good old boy service delivery? Take Keystone and Pendleton. They're heralded it as a project with tremendous success. How come Terry Trailers didn't receive notification?
Mm-hmm.
Or Bigfoot?
Representative Smith, I'm not sure who was notified, and I think you're right. There could be a danger of that. But I think mostly it's who they're. I mean, I think the community college, the workforce providers, and others are actually being pretty proactive. They're trying to find out, you know, who needs help. We don't have resources to provide training to every company. We're not trying to set up an uncompetitive environment either. We're not trying to pit competitors against each other, and that's why we're actually encouraging consortia projects. So I think it's a lot more based around need and also importance in their regional economy. And I think Keystone rose to the top because they were considering an expansion and they were going to add jobs, that's always going to be a high priority. So if somebody's going to add jobs, we certainly want to help them do that.
And just to follow up, and then I'll open this up to the committee, and I compliment Keystone for being in Pendleton. It's a tremendous project. But they were probably going to locate there anyway, and they were probably going to hire the employees anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out the benefit to the taxpayer by subsidizing a very good company that was going to locate in the community, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Representative Smith, that could be said for many of the companies, I think, who've received funding. We have heard from many, as a state in Oregon, we're very uncompetitive in this area. Our surrounding states, for instance, in Idaho and almost every other state in the country, actually has dollars that they put into these training funds, either general fund dollars, unemployment insurance dollars, some of them bond to pay for incumbent worker training. Most of them provide about $3,000 per employee anytime an employer says they need help. So for us, this is a very small step of trying to reach sort of that level of competition with other states. Keystone, I think, told us that they needed help in order to make that expansion here. They did have a location in another state, and they were considering a decision between states. And you're right. Anybody could tell us that, and we have to take them at their word. But we haven't tried to exclude companies that were not adding jobs either. We're counting on companies to tell us if they need to retrain. Some of it's around new technology. A lot of it has been around lean or high performance practices, which we think will help retain companies here. Much of the training has gone for ESL and other types of language barriers that companies have with workers with multiple skills or multiple languages in their workplace. So, you know, they're all different kinds of needs. And, I mean, you could make the argument that, yes, you know, anybody could have a need or tell us they have a need. But we think that it is helping to retain companies here, make them more competitive, keep jobs, upgrade skills, and keep the state competitive with other states.
And I appreciate that. What about how do you assist small and emerging companies? If I was to go to a workforce board and I employ 10, 15, 20 people, it's pretty hard for me to compete with my application versus a company of 150 who can roll out a nice-looking trailer and say, we're going to make more of these. And yet my product may be just as good, and I may be able to add 5, 10 more employees. How do we assist them?
Okay. This has been one of our challenges, Representative Smith, and I think we're actually been getting a lot of input on that from the governor has a small business council. They've been very interested in seeing how many grants go to small businesses. We are, as I said before, highly encouraging consortia projects, and that's how we hope to get small businesses together to train multiple employees from different companies. They share a labor pool, and we're trying to help them understand that it's advantageous to share a training program. But that takes a lot more work. It means that our workforce and economic development staff have to really organize those employers, find out what their needs are, and then develop the training program. And so I think initially this is a new emphasis area for us. I think initially probably a lot of the grants did go to larger companies. Actually, we have the numbers, and I could provide that for you. But we're really focusing, and the Workforce Board is focusing on trying to get more consortia projects organized so that we can make sure that small businesses get assistance as well.
Well, I'm just worried this body has created an expectation that you need to bring us large, sexy projects,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and we're not taking care of the 5, 10, 15
right.
person mom and pops company who really have just as much right to training. It right. may benefit a community just as much.
Mm-hmm. Representative Smith, that's one of the reasons when you see the distribution of we sent 65% of the money to these teams in the regions, and we saved some for strategic investments. We hoped that we could deal with some of the big occupational gaps at the state level or with, if you will, the sexy projects, and then still allow some of the smaller regions to get a pot of money to work with many of their smaller companies. And that was really our purpose for making sure that we had kind of a strategy at both levels. For instance, molecular probes was a sexy project. That came out of the state dollars. It didn't come out of the Lane workforce dollars that they're using to work with their smaller companies.
Senator Johnson.
I think also when you use the word lean manufacturing, mm-hmm. I think there's some confusion that has been created out in the marketplace, too. I have a company in my district that is a 100-year-old company and is still producing a very high-quality product on 100-year-old machinery. The economic development folks came in and said to them, we'll help you with a lean manufacturing analysis. Their question to me was, where's our money? You give grants to other companies, you give inducements to other companies, you give incentives to other companies. Why now are you giving us lean manufacturing and we don't get a grant? And so I think there's some confusion about what people's expectations are. The lack of connection between Oregon Economic and Community Development and just coming and handing out checks and the kind of systemic changes that you're talking about with some of these innovative new manufacturing processes and introducing those to small companies. And I don't know if you have a comment or not. I'm just making an observation that at least some of my constituents are confused.
Representative Smith, that's a great observation, and I think we are really working hard to partner with economic development so that we can avoid some of that confusion and also leverage resources. For example, they provide funding to the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership as part of their budget, and they do help companies get into lean manufacturing or high-performance enterprise work. And there are a lot of different ways that we can help a company besides providing them with a grant. And so I think if, again, we're trying to make sure that the tools in this workforce toolkit belong to economic development, just like that our tools, we adopt their tools as well when we're out working with the company. We know how to help them understand what else they can get from other types of services from the state. So we have more work to do in that area, but certainly it's something we're striving to do.
Do you offer, or do the regions offer seminars or classes not targeted to the employees but to the employers on how to deal with employee issues, how to deal with employee training, how to deal with creating more jobs within their company?
Well, Chair Smith, that's a, you've just broadened it quite a bit with that last question. I am aware that the Employment Department, through its employer committees that do exist across the state, offer just such kinds of workshops, work sessions specifically for employers, similar to what the Bureau of Labor and Industries offers for employers about wage and hour law and those kinds of raising the awareness of employers to their rights and responsibilities. Specifically, I can't think of other. Here would be an example that I know of in Lane County. The partners there were concerned about the how to get all the people who were interested in not just nursing but the allied health and healthcare professions in the same room to have the discussion so that they knew where to really target their efforts and their priorities and, yes, their resources. So they had what I call a y'all come meeting. And from the people who came, they helped them sort out where the largest priorities were from the people who were there, and they built a response plan. And so in that way, it was employer-focused, but it was employer-focused across the board from small clinics, doctor's offices, dentists, any to the hospital, to Peace Health. So I think that there are efforts, and that's the one that just comes to mind, to pick the brain of the employer so that they are assisting us in using our resources, both our human capital and our dollars, to ensure that we're meeting their priorities, not simply ours.
Well, this committee's probably getting tired of my broken record, but you haven't heard this yet. I think you have, but here comes rendition 20, I think. I'm absolutely convinced that we need all types of industry in the state, large, medium, and small. But I'm absolutely convinced the state ignores the small business owner, the entrepreneur, the mom and pop, companies that employ perhaps less than 50 people. And I'm absolutely convinced that one of the biggest detriments to creating jobs in the state of Oregon is the fact that small business owners don't know how to create the first job or how to manage the first couple employees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'd really like to try and see as we move into round two and we start putting all the pieces together is for you folks to figure out how we're going to link up your capabilities with the other folks in employment, in economic development, in small business development centers, in community colleges,
mm-hmm.
In consumer and business services, in I'm trying to think of the rest
mm-hmm.
of them, to figure out how we're going to work with small business. Last night I was going through the Economic Development Department's overview, and they acknowledged that the largest part of Oregon is small business.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we need to be doing all we can to coordinate that. I think you folks do good work. And I think sometimes we throw at you the expectation we want the big, sexy project. I guess I'm coming to you for my 6-7 months here and saying we also need to remember small business. And so in round two, I sure hope we can further that conversation a little bit mm-hmm. and how we can all work together to help small business owners.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Nobody wants to follow Rendition 20.
So. No, but Mr. Chairman, 75%, I do believe, is the percentage that they do throw out about small business, and I certainly include our business in one of them. So I think you're right on.
Thank you. Thank you. But we're gonna work together, and Senator Berger, you hit it on the head. We're all in this together. We need all segments of the economy, and we're going to try and bring all those together and see if we can create some synergy to help each other.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think with that, unless there's a reason for us to stick around, we'll end this public hearing, and I guess tomorrow, for informational meeting, excuse me, and then tomorrow, we start economic
yes.
development. So with that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much. This is very,
Thank
very
you.